For more information on ancient dragon Zen Gate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website. Good morning.
Good morning.
As Douglas already introduced me, my name is Aishin, and some of you know me as Nancy. And that's okay too. And I wanted to talk to you today about a topic that, I don't know, it just has been starting to feel timely to me. I want to talk today about anger, actually, which maybe feels out of place in the middle of the holiday season, and maybe feels a little bit right on time for the stress that we sometimes feel at this time of year. And maybe sometimes because we have a lot of expectations about how we should feel and how things should be, and things don't always match up with our expectations. But I've been thinking a lot about anger and its place in my life, and thought I would talk a little bit about some of what I've been sort of studying. So, you know, most of us were not raised within the Buddhist tradition, and maybe we're raised in another religious tradition. And anger is pretty much considered a problem, I think, by just about all religions. And it shows up in Buddhism in particular as one of the 10 grave precepts, which we, you know, sometimes chant. And the precept is, a disciple of Buddha does not harbor ill will. And, I think we can pay attention, we chant that and we think it and we're like, okay, so I won't harbor ill will. And I will get into this a little bit more later, but I wanted to say that, the precepts are, although they sort of say what a disciple of Buddha does or does not do, a disciple of Buddha does not kill, a disciple of Buddha does not take what is not given, does not use false speech, does not, misuse sexuality, intoxicate self at the expense of others, they're not really supposed to be like the Ten Commandments, like, okay, we're just not going to do this. They're not so much a prescriptive or, what to do or not do. They're actually intended to help us in our lives to unfold the Buddha's mind and how one can live in accord with the Buddha's mind. And so a lot of what I'm going to talk about is how we can, understand our anger and work with anger. Anger, I think we can agree that it feels horrible when we're angry for the most part. There might be some, rush of energy or adrenaline, but for the most part it feels horrible, and it really can cause harm to ourselves and to others. And yet it is very hard to work with or eradicate from our lives. I think, my own personal enlightenment fantasy, I think, involves this idea that, I will, nothing will bother me anymore, and I will not have to feel angry, and, I'm not entirely sure how I think that's going to happen, but but that is definitely one of the things that maybe brought me to practice. And anger is very pervasive in our culture. I am, profoundly aware that this weekend is the one-year anniversary of the shootings at the elementary school in Newtown, Connecticut, and on Friday there was a shooting in a high school in Colorado, and, I can't really say much about what caused those events to happen, although I suspect that anger was involved in some way. But I know that in the aftermath of those events, many people are left with this feeling of, anger and sadness and rage, and what do we do about this? So, and I truly do not have the answers to that. You know, I think that, that those are huge and very pervasive and individual, and both pervasive and individual problems. But what I would like to talk about today is just some of the causes and manifestations of anger in our lives and in our culture, and how we can work with it in our practice. And I brought with me more books than I will even be able to talk to you guys about, but I have a very, I guess, decent collection of books about the precepts and about anger. And if anyone is interested later in looking at them, I'd be happy to do that. But I brought a few books on, you know, working with anger and Waking Up to What You Do, which is on the precepts, The Mind of Clover, which is also on the Zen precepts. But my very favorite book about the Zen precepts is Being Upright by Reb Anderson, and he talks very comprehensively about each of the precepts, including, you know, a disciple of Buddha does not harbor ill will. And he discusses this precept from the perspective of giving up inappropriate anger. And he kind of distinguishes between anger that is maybe appropriate and anger that is really inappropriate. And what he considers appropriate anger to be is, anger at injustice that results in harm to others. To sort of summarize it, it could be, you know, anger at our own actions or anger at someone else's actions, anger when we see that others are being harmed and, you know, and don't deserve it, and it brings up this feeling. It's almost like I think it's related to a feeling of empathy and maybe a wish to help. And he distinguishes this from inappropriate anger, which is anger that derives from our own self-centered misperception of the world, that our anger about, why things don't go the way we want them to. I think we can think about anger as coming out of our greed, hatred, and delusion, sort of the three, poisons that the Buddha talked about. We have greed, or trying to grasp for things. We have hatred or aversion, or trying to push things away. And we have delusion or ignorance about, what we're doing. So I think this was the Buddha's original teaching about how things continue to perpetuate in the world, how things continue to come into being in our misguided actions. And working with those, we can try to bring some peace to our world. So it's maybe easy to see how anger relates to hatred, right? As I start to think about giving this talk, I start to think about what do these words mean? And I don't really, anger is very much related to hatred. Hatred is kind of a manifestation of aversion of, I don't like this, I don't want this, I oppose this, and can often give rise to anger when it persists. But it's maybe not so easy to see how anger is related to greed. Greed is, oh, I want this, I like this, I'm gonna try to get a little bit more of this. And yet when we become, it's attachment, it's like, ooh, give me some more of this. When we become attached to things or people or beliefs or views, and we are, unable to hold on to them or to possess them, we can become really angry. We get really frustrated. Our greed is, kind of not satisfied. And, yet another reason that's maybe related to greed in a way for anger arising is our delusion, or our kind of ignorant misperception of people or things or experiences or beliefs as separate, unchanging, belonging to us in some way. We often look around the world and think that things are, they're out there and we can do something with them, and That's actually a little bit of a misconception or a misperception of the world. If we kind of go back to the thought of dependent co-arising, which is the understanding that everything depends on everything else, and it's constantly being kind of co-created, and it's constantly shifting. Excuse me. Then, you know, believing that all of that is somehow unchanging, or that we can possess it, or that we can control it, can really, it's partly, you know, ignorance, but it can really result in anger. You know, we want things to be other than the way that they are. So these would all be aspects of, you know, what Reb would consider inappropriate anger. Anger that's based on, you know, what I want the world to be this way. And sometimes that's even, you know, anger when we want the world to be more just or more fair. You know, I think even when anger is appropriate in that way, it is not always a useful way to respond to a situation. You may have some personal experience with, you know, trying to protest something or oppose something and feeling like the more that you try to, you know, push, you know, it makes the other person shut down. They don't want to hear. They pull away. And so even though our anger over an unjust situation may be appropriate, it makes it hard for the other person to hear us. We can maybe benefit from finding some other way to communicate, and work with our anger and with the other people that we need to interact with. So. I want to talk a little bit about some causes for anger, and I'll start with our culture. You know, I think anger is seen in our culture as kind of an inevitable part of life. You know, and we see, you know, anger, or we see aggression actually as sometimes a necessary means of responding to situations in which we feel wrong being done. It's just, you know, might makes right, and it's sometimes I think it can really feel like the only way to respond. You know, we are constantly steeped in, you know, TV violence, which actually, you know, desensitizes us to anger and violence. And although, you know, it's not the intention, TV I think actually you know, tends to appeal to whatever will make people watch it, which sometimes, you know, sometimes the more, it seems like the more outrageous sometimes things get, the more we want to watch, and we're, you know, kind of stuck there. But it actually, it kind of ups the ante in a way, and desensitizes us to anger and violence, and kind of almost implies that it's okay. Similarly, I think we have a lot of, you know, aggressive video games, which, you know, encourage the practice of aggression. And actually, when I was in grad school, I had to do some research on this. And one of the things that I discovered is that there truly is research out there that demonstrates that TV violence and video games is very much related to the, you know, practice of aggression in you know, high school students and in people in general. It's a little bit of I'll get into, you know, kind of our pop culture belief that expressing anger is healthy, and it's really the only way to deal with anger is to get it out rather than, you know, we hear about people saying, well, you know, you got to get it out because otherwise it's just going to fester, right? And we don't want anger to fester. That's not good, because it will eventually, or it can eventually, you know, really explode and come out sideways and come out in some really unhelpful and sometimes very harmful ways. But so sometimes people will recommend, you know, okay, don't blow up at your boss, just go home and punch a pillow. And on the one hand, that's maybe a better solution in the short term, but on the other hand, it doesn't do anything to really help people learn ways to cope with the anger that they feel in different situations where they're feeling, you know, disenfranchised. And so, you know, I think this kind of these things kind of demonstrate our collective lack of awareness of other ways to respond to situations without anger, and maybe sometimes even, you know, it demonstrates our lack of value of other ways to respond to situations. We don't often see, you know, a lot of demonstration of positive ways to work with anger. Although I am hoping that you guys will prove me wrong when we have a little bit of a discussion, and maybe we can talk about, you know, ways that people have found in their lives that of working with anger that really have brought, you know, peace to themselves and peace to others. So that is, you know, part of what we're coming to this practice with culturally. I was, in part of my work on thinking about anger, I was reading that, you know, our culture is very individualistic, which we all know, and tends to be fairly aggressive. And other cultures, the one that was cited was the Tibetan culture, have a very different way of thinking about things that happen, about situations that might make us angry, and have very different ways of responding to those. So it's not, although we, you know, from our earliest childhood grow up with this belief that, you know, this is normal and this is kind of how you respond to things, it's not necessarily true for everyone. And actually, it's not even necessarily true for everyone within our culture. And so let me get to like sort of personal reasons for anger. You know, anger is sometimes something that we learn in our, you know, from responses within our family. We may have, you know, families where that have sort of collective stories of ways in which, you know, the world is treating them wrongly. I know that I personally picked up some messages within my family about that are very pessimistic, and how you know, there's just not enough good stuff in the world. The basic theme is, you know, there's not enough good in the world. We alone will be stuck with the bad. No one else will know or care. And there's a lot of sort of, you know, view of the glass as half empty, just for basic starters. And we may also grow up in families where, you know, there is maybe one family member who is particularly angry and maybe sometimes even abusive, and we may learn to be very afraid of our own anger because we don't want to be like that person who harmed us. Or we may learn that, you know, okay, that's the only way to be, you know, you gotta really, you know, what's the word? I don't know. Just control others before you get controlled yourself. So we also may have situations where we feel, you know, grew up feeling in some ways very victimized. And so this fear of helplessness, you know, as we get some, grow up and get some agency, can turn into more of sort of an aggressive approach. You know, I'm not gonna be stuck like I once was. And I was reading about an example of a man who learned to from his parents to respond very angrily and when other people criticized their ethnic group. And although that may be somewhat appropriate anger over being treated and having others treated unjustly, what he learned over the course of his adult life was to respond in ways that actually were more conducive to his cause. And we'll get into that in a little bit. So we learn sometimes about anger from our families. We learn sometimes, you know, sometimes we learn about violence from our families. And it gets kind of magnified sometimes by our culture to where it becomes almost kind of habitual. And what I mean by this is there are lots of times when we can sort of think through, okay, is this worth getting angry over? Or, you know, okay, I can see that this is not an appropriate, you know, way to express my anger. But what I have become really, really aware of in myself personally is sort of habitual anger. That's just sort of a characteristic response that we are not really aware of. I know over, you know, when I think about the role of anger in my life, and you can maybe take stock of yourself as well. I know that there were, I can think of situations where the impulse for anger would arise, you know, maybe years ago, and have observed over time that particular angry impulse no longer arises. That whatever it is, it doesn't press my button. I don't, you know, just respond in that way. But there are lots of ways in which I am not always aware of sort of the characteristic response, or the almost like a paradigm of anger that comes from, you know, beliefs or fears about the world, and it's just, you know, unconscious, almost anger. So I was, you know, I was going to share, I thought about, you know, well, maybe I should just talk personally. I will tell you for sure, I do not speak to you today as a success story. I, you know, by no means have I really learned to work with anger productively in my life or eradicate it from my life. And I was going to share a little bit of my own personal story. And as I thought about it, I was like, I kept coming up with all these things, and I was like, wow, where do I begin? How do I distill this? And then I, you know, I think over time I just decided, you know, it's just not that important. And maybe what's more important is just sharing awareness that we all have our reasons. We all have our own personal injustices that have been, you know, maybe a part of our lives from day one that, you know, we learned within our family, we learned within our culture, we learned from the, you know, meanness of kids around us or adults who, you know, maybe don't feel so good about themselves either. And so are, you know, treating us poorly and making us feel, you know, really bad, really badly. I know within myself, I was, I never really wanted to be angry. I didn't want, I actually was raised in a tradition where I learned that we should turn the other cheek. And I really tried as a kid to turn the other cheek, but I, you know, I can see now as an adult, kids don't have a lot of ability to really understand a situation, and left to their own devices, you know, they really need some help sometimes. And turning the other cheek just didn't always work, and it often wound up, you know, making me feel even more like I was getting walked on. And so, you know, what I learned to do was to apply anger as almost like an antidote. And if you, this may apply to you as well, you know, to hurt feelings where, you know, anger would come up about, you know, oh, I'm gonna get revenge, or to anxious feelings, anger will come up as impatience, or, you know, I gotta do something about this right now. Or, you know, with fatigue over really trying to do something positive, you know, anger can come up for me and maybe for you as well as resentment. And just as a means of coping with, a bad means, a not very skillful means of coping with negative feelings over what's happening in our lives, you know. And I think what's especially hard is that I'm not always personally even aware that I'm angry or that there is an alternative. I actually snapped at someone last week because I did not like the way that they were handing me the mail. And then, you know, like in the moment it feels so justified. It's like, well, no, they're wrong. This is not how you do it. And then, you know, over having some time to reflect, you know, maybe in Zazen, we were on a 5-day retreat. I had plenty of time to, you know, for this incident to sort of come up and just be like, wow, I was really kind of angry there. And I was really, you know, kind of, you know, snippy. And, you know, learning that, you know, learning to identify that we're angry and to consider that there may be an alternative is really, you know, something that we can do in part of our practice. So, you know, although anger can feel like an inevitable part of life, I think the precept of, you know, a disciple of Buddha does not harbor ill will, it kind of implies that maybe it's not. You know, maybe we don't have perfect control over what arises in us, but maybe there are ways that we can learn to relate to that experience, you know. And yet, you know, we can have the very best intentions in the world and not be able to refrain from anger because it's not under our conscious control. And, you know, sometimes our efforts to control it are just more of our own self-centeredness. I don't want to be an angry person. Rather than, you know, thinking about how are my actions impacting the people around me. So I want to talk a little bit about how we can work with anger in our lives, and maybe we can have a little bit of a discussion about this in a little bit. But the thing I want to stress in the very, very beginning is I think that the way to work with anger starts with not trying to not become angry. The first thing to do is maybe something that we can do in Zazen is just to observe, and when we sit for some time every day and just, let things arise, we can start by just observing, even think about, observing your physical sensations related to anger. Anger, I think for many of us, brings with it a host of different kinds of feelings or sensations. You might have tightness somewhere, in your jaw or your chest or your arms. You might feel that your heart is pounding, your stomach is churning. You might notice that your vision is unclear. People talk about sort of seeing red when they have that flash of anger. That comes out of the fight or flight response. So we can spend some time in Zazen or elsewhere checking in with ourselves about what are we feeling. And actually, I want to suggest that everybody just sort of check in with yourself right now. Notice what you feel. You don't have, there's not a quiz. You won't have to share it, but just spend some time and notice what you might be experiencing. Notice if you notice any tightness anywhere or any other uncomfortable physical sensation. And then we can move on. Another thing that we can observe are thoughts that indicate or suggest that we are angry. Things like, obviously disliking or resenting some person or entity. Thoughts of, she's so wrong. On the opposite end, maybe sort of we're noticing thoughts of that are justifying our own rightness. I did this right, I can come up with justifications for just about anything that's going on. And so for me, I can notice that and then I have to kind of step back a little bit and say, okay, wait a minute, that may be true, whatever. It doesn't really matter, because what's really going on is you're angry. What can you do with that? We can also observe feelings. Feelings like irritation, frustration, jealousy, spite, resentment, impatience, belligerence, the feeling of like, I'm gonna fight. Sort of a heaviness or darkness or even feelings of kind of self-righteousness can also suggest that we're angry. So there's lots that we can observe. We can observe physical sensations, we can observe thoughts, we can observe feelings, and we can invite these experiences, however grudgingly we may feel about them, to just be present. And I think that this is a helpful way of countering something that maybe is also a natural inclination, which is to try to deny that we're angry because we think we shouldn't be. If we're gonna be, good Buddhists or good Zen students, we should be, not angry. We even just thinking about anger, thinking about talking about anger, it feels so un-Zen, right? People are gonna look at us and they're gonna be like, wow, you're not very peaceful. That may be where things are at in the moment. And we want to just try to, maybe we can create some space around that where we're not at least acting in poisonous ways. But just to allow those feelings and experiences in privately for our own consideration. And then, along with observing, we can actively practice patience. All of the authors that I surveyed or have surveyed thus far recommend practicing patience. And patience is one of six or 10, depending on your tradition, paramitas, which are beneficial actions of bodhisattvas. Just to go back to another phrase I used, skillful means or working skillfully, that's another paramita. Learning how to be skillful with whatever comes up in our lives so that we're not just perpetuating something that's a little bit toxic. But back to patience. Patience involves really just sitting with our pain and learning to kind of listen to and tolerate it. We may not actively welcome it. We may just feel like, you know, ugh, what are you doing here? But learning to just be with that without interfering, we can offer comfort to ourselves. I think Sharon Salzberg has a book on loving kindness and recommends sort of a loving kindness meditation where we really just wish that we will be happy and peaceful and joyful, and we can you know, begin to extend that wish to others around us and really work with it as a practice. Practice is a little bit of an antidote of to feelings that feel like they're completely out of our control. Practice is one aspect of beginning to change some of those situations, you know. But I want to really also stress, it's important not to expect the situation to change or for anger to disappear overnight. You know, we are in this for the long haul. Practice implies maybe that we will never be completely done with this. There will be opportunities for things to arise, but we can maybe learn how to, you know, respond to a little bit more skillfully, you know, possibly until our last breath. So recognizing that we can't, I really love the environmental movement for this, because what I learned from ecology and the environmental movement is that we can never take out the garbage. You know, the garbage always has to go someplace. It doesn't just, you know, we send things to the dump or we throw things out in the trash and it doesn't ever really go away. And I think that that is true actually with us emotionally as well. We have to learn how to you know, recycle our own garbage and maybe can, you know, work with it, turn it into something else. And patience is part, I think, of doing that. Another aspect of patience is maybe learning to recognize the interconnected nature of all of the aspects of the problem that we're troubled with. And, you know, when we think about the things that make us angry, I mean, if I don't like the way someone hands me the mail, I don't even really know what I would want them to do differently with that. You know, I mean, I'm down to like, I don't even know what to say. So, you know, recognizing the counterproductive aspects of anger in the resolution of a situation is maybe another aspect of developing some patience. And patience, I don't have a checklist for how you can develop this in your own life, but I do know for sure that you can start right now. And just by tolerating, you know, the next thing that comes up that we want to push away, we're building a little bit of patience bit by bit. So other aspects of practicing patience can mean recognizing that there are times when our frustration tolerance has been exceeded. I realized this eventually in my life, that there are times when no amount of my pounding away at a solution is going to get me anywhere because I can't think clearly anymore. You know, one aspect of anger or anxiety or frustration is that we really lose the ability to think clearly. I can't tell you exactly what I'm thinking in those moments, but it often involves continuing to insist that something change or that I change. I can maybe sometimes only see, you know, very black and white solutions. And that is like the hallmark of anger and anxiety, is that we think in a very, you know, kind of, we get tunnel vision. We can only think in black and white alternatives. Either this has to happen or that has to happen. And at those times, I want to suggest that we just try to take a step back and not do anything. You know, just take a deep breath. It's maybe a time to practice really letting go of whatever it is for the moment. The only I probably everyone has heard, I think it's the quote by Thich Nhat Hanh, that the only way to peace is through peace. When we are in that state where we're extremely agitated, it's very hard to get to peace or any kind of solution without just, you know, let's just drop this. Let's just let it go for right now. You don't want to stuff it, because that gets back to sort of the black and white thinking about anger. Either we have to express it, or we have to come up with a solution now, or we have to just stuff it. It's not that. It's just, you know, let's press the pause button on this. Just, you know, walk away. So, and then maybe come back to the situation at a time when we are just naturally feeling more patience. If you observe yourself over time, you may notice that there are times when you feel more patient, times when you feel less so, and it kind of ebbs and flows in your life. And so, you know, if you can kind of come back to a situation at a time when you're feeling a little more patient, a little more relaxed, just naturally, you may find a way to work with that situation that, you know, I think as we learn to work with situations skillfully, we kind of add to our repertoire. Some people are really, you know, naturally skilled at human relationships, and I'm really not. I'm really not naturally skilled at human relationships. It became, you know, a study for my life, and I think that's maybe how I decided to become my decision to become a therapist came out of that study from, you know, having worked with some of those things for a long, long period of time. But there are lots of times when I really get tripped up. I have noticed that, in particular, I can approach things very pessimistically and negatively and angrily, and, you know, I just have this expectation and paradigm of anger that comes from, you know, my earliest conditioning and who knows what in my past life. But, you know, my husband, for example, has a very different approach. Things rarely make him angry. The things that do make him angry are often things that don't make me angry. And he tends to approach life with a much more optimistic kind of framework. And I've observed that a lot of times that results in things just working a lot more smoothly for him. So it's I'm not trying to suggest that there is a way to be or a way to work with anger, but I find it interesting to observe that other people can construct situations in such different ways that, you know, sometimes our anger comes out of the meaning that we give to a situation or what we think is happening. And I think that maybe part of skillful means involves learning or you know, kind of thinking through, you know, ways of observing what's happening that are not so anger producing. So I think I just, you know, kind of want to say that. I want to just conclude by saying that, you know, I think one major purpose for practice and for the precepts is to help others. We're not really, and, you know, my talk about anger is not intended to give anyone this feeling of like, oh, you know, I need to go on this self-improvement kick and get rid of anger in my life. I think the idea is, and maybe one thing that helps in thinking about the role of anger in my life is thinking about how am I, you know, how can I help others? You know, one way that, you know, maybe I can help others is to help them to, you know, find peace and contentment in their lives, that I find some way of coping with some of the negative experiences that others are having, you know, that I also have some familiarity with. But I think the best way for any of us to do this is by coming out of our own place of peace. And maybe we can talk a little bit about ways that people have found to find that peace in their lives when at times when we're feeling, you know, really angry. Sometimes just, you know, having the ability to offer a soothing or benign, you know, or good natured response can sometimes really turn things around for ourselves beyond anything that we would have really expected. So with that, I want to conclude.